Hello everyone, it's great to see everyone here today. What I'm presenting is a collaboration with Shaunak Sen, who is a filmmaker and PhD scholar based in Delhi, who's part of the Urban Ecologies Project in Cambridge. We're hoping to bring together our perspectives as a more than human geographer and a film theory scholar interested in the digital respectively. And I've just finished the last interviews that are the basis of this project in Ukraine. So this is a rough structure and plan for the paper we're putting together now. So I'm going to get straight into it. In the 33 years since the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, the 30-kilometre exclusion zone has paradoxically emerged as one of Europe's truly wild sanctuaries at 1,600 square miles, spanning both the Ukraine and Belarus. Most of my work so far has taken place in the Ukrainian side of the zone with dogs, but I draw from interviews with researchers here, mainly from Belarus, in this presentation today. Chernobyl then is simultaneously a more than human site of desolation and hope, a place that allows us to reflect on the nature of nature in the Anthropocene, where the emerging ecosystem is haunted and disturbed by the material and effective trace of the nuclear disaster. The wolves at Chernobyl have garnered special attention from a range of groups. Having recolonised the zone since the disaster, they have established a population seven times greater than in surrounding uncontaminated nature reserves. But like most animals in Chernobyl, they remain largely unstudied. In a recent paper, however, researchers tracked the movement of a pack of 14 European grey wolves within the Belarusian zone. One particular finding from the study received significant media attention. A young male wolf outfitted with a GPS tracker that simultaneously acted as a dosimeter to measure its radiation exposure travelled around 369 kilometres, moving across Belarus and into Russia. After being tracked for several months, the GPS signal from the collar was lost, leading to the wolf going off the digital grid. The researchers today are still unsure of the fate of the wolf they tracked. The media reacted with sharp alarm as reports of radioactive mutant wolves spreading mutant genes across Europe proliferated through the latter half of 2018. In the wake of this story, we aim to unpack the dynamic of visibility and invisibility inaugurated by the disappearance of the corporeal body of the wolf and the hyper-presence of the wolf as digital trace, which is generated through its movement. We consider the shifting ontological status of the animal whose primary figuration is through the GPS technologies and the effective relations the researchers have with the wolf whilst using these technologies in tracing its mobility. Animal geographers have recently become interested in GPS technologies and other methods related to animal movements. Following Hodgetts and Lorimer, we take our theoretical departure point by considering what they term animals' mobilities, with the apostrophe here after the S, which goes beyond the simple understandings of the spatial ecology of animals to the politics and ethics of animal movement or stillness. Animals' mobilities are shaped by a range of landscape and human factors, but are also concerned with how the resulting mobilities are experienced and gain meaning, in this case, in the digital realm. Whilst many studies on animal movement and mobilities have often been read through the theoretical lens of animal governmentality and more than human biopolitics, which emphasise the human disciplinary exertions that modulate control over more than human movements, we tentatively aim to suggest ways in which the moving animal might be conceptualised somewhat differently through thinking with its digital trace. To do this, we query the Chernobyl wolf in three iterations: its corporeal self, as it is initially tagged in Chernobyl, its transition into a digital dot on the map, and its final status is the spectral off-the-grid absence. Here, we aim to look deeper into the effects that these technologies and methods that aim to get closer to the lived geographies and experiences of animals themselves have on the human-animal relationship. With the popular dissemination of GPS tracking technologies and locative media and conservation biology, notions of space and time are somewhat wobbled. Animal mobilities have to be understood within the context of these digital armatures through which animals get tracked and thereby, we argue, refigured. GPS presents an unprecedented cartographic entity. Unlike any map of the past, it shares a radical immediacy and simultaneity with the tracked body. The real-time movement of the tracked body is, in fact, the ontology of the GPS map. To move is to create, to move is to perceive and become a perceivable subject. A GPS map often entails a collapse between moving, using and spectating images. Nana Verhoef has called this a performative cartography where space itself is rendered legible by dint of movement. The GPS thus stitches together what Verhoef calls a screen space, a hybrid interface where spatial coordinates, binary digits and pixels get navigated together, where Euclidean space, informatics and visuality enmesh. Given that the GPS images from an overhead aerial axis, the ground becomes the surface on which a moving body gets hieroglyphed. The ground functions as the canvas or inscriptive surface on which movement gets written and traced. So, In what ways do we think of the wolf when it is a digital trace on the map? And how do we read anew its movement, its relation to the map, and consequently the ambient intimacies and unique human-animal relations it prompts? The Chernobyl evacuation was abrupt, with the authorities giving the residents 50 or so minutes to evacuate. Homes amidst regular mundaneness were suddenly frozen. Traces of the suddenly abandoned material past still persist today, although altered and decayed. Humans, as many have argued, are the ghosts who haunt this eerie landscape. Yet Chernobyl is haunted by a more infamous and visible presence of radiation. From the 1940s to 1980s, Soviet engineers made isotopes that don't exist in nature, like strontium-90, cesium-137, and plutonium-238 and 239. After the leak, much of this radiation, from as long back as 1942, underwent rapid radioactive decay. Kate Brown's recent work on the Great Chernobyl Acceleration shows the zone has been contaminated long before the catastrophe in 86 and actually has a much longer history of being a contaminated landscape. Most of the contaminants exist today, however, only as traces of the leak event from 3 decades ago. Human-made cesium-137 thus often has a spectral grammar. It can travel via water, soil and wind. It can enter and stay inside animals and plants, and it can't be seen but only sensed via its inchoate traces, as Elaine Gain suggests in Arts of Living on a Damaged Planet. As Anna Singh et al. In this book argue, radiation disturbs us in its sheer indeterminacy, which gives it its ghostly quality. Radio autographs are trace-like articulations of radiation, material remnants or residues of a past that coexists. The GPS collars then, used to track the wolves in Chernobyl, simultaneously collect data on their exposure to this lingering presence of radiation in the environment as they travel and move throughout the zone. We're thus able to see how their mobility is linked to and becomes part of the material past that continues to haunt the present. So, more specifically to the wolves then, the particular young male wolf we're interested in Chernobyl was actually demonstrating a normal wolf behaviour according to the researchers that were tracking him. It was a normal dispersal event where a lone wolf leaves its pack in search of a mate. The movement of the wolf itself is therefore not inherently special, but rather we've become interested in how this very normal event was registered and represented by scientists and in the media. As many animal populations have rebounded in Chernobyl following the twofold disturbance of urbanisation and then abandonment, the wolves exist in the public imagination as weirdly opaque presences. While their resurgence is reported, these animals function as incongruous presences in what is a desolate state of exception location. Their flourishing is often shocking in this landscape, and they often get read as extensions of the zone itself, vectors of its radioactivity through their movement and mobility. The wolves are illegible and somewhat spectral presences in the zone, and many people I spoke to recently about who were researching these wolves suggested that they had seen wolves eating dogs, but most of the Western scientists often disagreed with this as like a possibility. The act of tagging by this research team then simultaneously renders them legible, present and knowable. The object of study for the scientists isn't just the wolf but radioactivity itself. The object of study becomes this specifically materially situated young wolf and its entire material ecology. Given that radioactivity gets studied only via traces, the wolf presents a lively body to the radioactivity. It is the movement of the wolf that allows the radiation to become dangerously mobile and a biosecurity threat in the eyes of the media and some spectators. And it's the body of the wolf and the genes that it carries around via this body that are represented as mutants ready to be transported to other wolf populations outside of the zone. It's worth highlighting that this is just a representation. The wolf's movement and behaviour are thus a synecdoche or sentinel of its environment, or its weather world, as Ingold would say. The wolf becomes Chernobyl as its movement is tracked and represented. The wolf's movement thus inaugurates an ontocartography. The wolf comes into being as a tracked mobile subject sensed through geoplanetary infrastructures. It gets reconfigured as a digital trace through its movement in the landscape. So the GPS collars on the wolves allow scientists, in their own words, to glimpse through a window into the animals' lives. This window meant that the researchers could essentially track in real time the movements of the wolf combined with its radiation exposure. Our interviews revealed that the human-wolf relation was transformed by this. This tracking method and the digital trace it produces often ended up somewhat objectifying the wolf. One scientist reported seeing the wolf as a data point during the project, primarily worrying about gathering good data rather than the wolf itself at certain times. This was made clear when the wolf went offline, and the concern was in part about the data, not the wolf itself. Others spoke about worrying when the dot on the screen walked through dangerous human habitations or places with automobile traffic. The dot on the screen was often conceived as a collaborator, a digital animal presence that prompted its own kind of ambient intimacies. When the lone wolf exits the zone, it transitions into a biosecurity risk, as contagion visibilized. At this point, the wolf is visually figured in logics not very different from animals traditionally seen as carriers of zoonotic diseases. These animals were often framed as risks, as transgressions of human orderings to be quarantined or eliminated. The dot on the map moves from being the recently legibilized Chernobyl subject to being a visual index of contraband toxicity, a genetic threat to the pure and uncontaminated wolf population surrounding the zone. Once the digital wolf goes off the grid completely, however, a new kind of absence is initiated. The wolf, formerly an absent physical presence, now becomes absent digitally as well. It becomes a pure trace. One scientist mentioned that he would often stare at the digital map searchingly and longingly, fearing that now the wolf's signature wasn't visible, the animal may have died in an accident or had been shot. The abdication of the visual in this case is akin to death. The loss of this wolf still haunts the research team today, who, when I spoke to them, could only speculate what had happened to it. I might skip one too far there. So this new absent presence takes on a monstrous grammar in the media. The digitally absent wolf is now Chernobyl incarnate. It takes the monstrous form of radioactivity exteriorized. It's imagined with glowing eyes as abnormally large and disfigured. The movement of radiation to outside the zone coincides with the imagination of radiation manifesting itself physically and externally. Radiation transforms from being an invisible ghostly presence to an actively visible monstrous form. As the wolf becomes physically and digitally invisible, radiation assumes speculative visible forms. Going off the grid also spawns its own kinds of uncanniness. Geoplanetary technologies like Google Maps make the rhetorical claim of laminating the whole world in their satellite vision. All territory beyond the differentials of countries or regions become transparent within this cosmopolitan. Benjamin Bratton suggests that objects that fall outside the reach of such geoplanetary infrastructure form a new kind of contemporary uncanny. Subjects mysteriously outside the familiar blanket of Google Earth become unhomely. Getting lost in a world where getting lost is an impossibility is a new form of uncanny Anthropocene anxiety. As the young male wolf that dispersed from its pack became a ghost when its GPS signal was lost, it's unclear whether it survived its journey outside of the zone. As hunting in the zone increases, it's unclear what the fate of the population will be, but the tracking of this dispersal event is suggestive that Chernobyl may be a source of wildlife rather than the sink, as has been previously thought. So as conservation and animal studies increasingly engage with the digital, which has the potential of endlessly replicating and proliferating narratives from research, various new theorists have pointed to the rise of a new kind of digital horror. This is the fear of things that are particular, distributive, nodal and proliferative. The vanished wolf takes on this grammar of horror as well, an uncontrolled, hazardous node of radioactivity in the world. It is this dialectic between lost and mapped, visible and invisible, physical and digital, contaminated and resurgent that the Chernobyl wolf gets configured through today. Whilst animals mobility scholars aim to use certain technological and methodological advances to get closer to the lived geographies and experiences of the animals themselves, we suggest that, whilst there is no doubt this is in some ways true, the animal itself, along with the human or researcher-animal relation, also gets reconfigured through this process of research in culturally and effectively significant ways that eventually come back to bear on the lives of animals themselves. For example, new relations are opened up as the researchers are aware of the status of the wolf 24 hours a day. And finally, by tracing how the wolf moves through and out of Chernobyl, the researchers, we argue, create a new wolf, a digital trace where the bodily presence can become absent in how they relate to the dot on the screen. At the same time, through monitoring the wolf's exposure to radiation, a wolf is created that in itself becomes part of the Chernobyl zone, becomes part of the landscape. It is represented as a specifically Chernobyl wolf, making mobile radioactive particles and apparently making mobile the mutant genes that it carries, creating this biosecurity threat to humans and wolves outside of the zone. In doing so, we speculate that the borders of the zone itself are remapped and become porous through the movement of this animal. Thank you.